BOAG World is brought to you by headscape.co.uk in association with getsignoff.com and the website Owner's Manual.
This week's show sees the return of Ryan and Stanton holding the fort while Paul and Marcus send themselves on holiday. We'll be talking about taking your first steps into the world of conferences and answering your questions about font smoothing and browser emulators.
Hi Paul, how are you doing?
Hi Paul, how are you?
Hello Paul.
Hi Paul.
Hi Paul and Marcus.
Hello and welcome to the first ever BOAGworld.com podcast.
BOAG World!
Hello and welcome to the 100th episode of BOAG World!
Hello! Welcome to the 129th episode of BOAGworld.com, the podcast. I can't remember what it is. I've phased him out completely, you know.
The podcast for all those involved in designing and developing websites. Of running websites on a daily basis.
I've listened to him say that so many times, I completely blanked it out now.
Yeah, you just kind of skip it, fast forward a bit.
As you may have guessed, I'm not Paul BOAG.
I'm not Marcus Lillington.
So are we?
Well, you're Ryan Taylor.
Yeah, and you're Paul Stanton.
It's turning a bit too Ronnie's, this, isn't it?
Good night from me. It's good night from him.
Go on then, Ryan, introduce yourself to those wonderful listeners out there in BOAG World.
Well, I'm obviously Ryan Taylor. I'm the producer of the show. I'm also...
Sounds posh, that, doesn't it?
I'm also a web designer and developer, focusing on design and front-end development more than back-end, although I'm currently employed as a back-end developer. But so
I was just going to let that fly. I was just going to leave it too easy.
Back-end developer. So if there are any design agencies out there looking for a front-end developer, you know, give me a shout. You can get my email through my website. And who are you, Paul?
Well, I work in higher education as a web designer / developer because I never really figured out what I want to do. So, mainly focusing on web standards, semantic markup, tend to get a bit militant, forcing that upon the rest of my colleagues. Again, back-end development, as back-end. We call it now.
Very
lots
good.
Of fun, different projects every now and again. No 2 days are the same.
No. So where are Paul and Marcus? Well, they're sunning themselves on holiday. Well, I can't remember where Marcus said he was going. He went to Spain or something like that.
Yeah, I think... Isle of Wight?
That's like Spain, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a bit south.
A bit south of here, so it's quite far away.
I don't think Paul's quite sunning himself in Scotland.
He's put some cracking pictures up, though. He's gloating about it, doesn't he, on Twitter?
Oh, yeah, he often does. Yes.
By the way, Paul's talking at New York Future of Web Design, which I've been told I need to pump. He actually sent me an email saying, can you pump my talk at Future of Web Design New York?
How exactly do you pump a talk?
He meant to say pimp.
Oh, okay.
It was apparently the iPhone predictive test. I said to him, that's a little bit messy, but sure.
So he's going to New York?
He's going to New York, and he won't take me with him. He says if I went, then Marcus would cry.
So?
No, that's what I said, but he still won't take me. So, Try to think of anything else we need to say before we start.
Well, as always, this podcast will be brought to you by the Website Owner's Manual.
Oh, yes.
Yes,
which you can download. It's got some convoluted way of getting the chapters at the minute, hasn't it?
Yeah, there's the Early Access Program where you can register on the site and pay for the book in advance and you get access to the chapters as Paul decides to finish them.
So when he's could be waiting a very long time. Should we get on with the news?
I think we shall.
On to you. BOAGworld.com.
Right, so last Wednesday saw a new developer release from the Firefox team. Firefox 3.1 Alpha, or Shiritoko, is now available for download. Shiritoko is built on a pre-release version of the Gecko 1.9.1 platform and introduces several new features for you to play with. I'll read them off. Web standards improvements in the Gecko layout engine. They don't actually say what improvements, so I guess we'll have to just trust them with this one. But from what I can gather, they've added a lot more CSS3 selectors like nth child, the CSS3 word wrap property, CSS3 columns, text shadow, box shadow, border image, and more. The text API for the canvas element's been added. This is quite a detailed API for drawing vector text within the canvas element. This will be sure to set the hearts of typophiles beating just a little bit faster, and it looks quite cool from what I can see.
I like typophiles. You turn into Shakespeare, just making up your own words, are you?
Do you want me to do it all in Shakespearean, putting thy and thy doth?
Shakespeare in a northern accent would be absolutely phenomenal.
Hey, up thy hath detailed API for drawing thy vector text in thy browser. Me lad.
Anyway, continue. Sorry for interrupting.
Yeah, you will be. Support for using border images. The design community has been screaming for this for as long as I can remember. The ability to specify images as borders. The whole rounded corner crease might be slightly out of style now, but I'm sure we'll see some innovation with this feature quite soon. Support for JavaScript. JavaScript. I'm not Jonathan Woss. Support for JavaScript query selectors.
Do the whole section in the Jonathan Ross lips.
See, you can't even say it.
Okay, I can see it.
Right, now we'll read it as normal. We'll be professional, you see. They've entrusted this podcast to us. At least we can do is try our best.
Okay.
Now, I'm not completely down with the JavaScript kits, so I apologise if I don't get this quite right, but query selectors seem to be a way to target specific selectors instead of having to filter a result set provided by the getElementsByTagName call. So you can now do in the filtering before you execute the query and get exactly what you need. There's also several improvements to the smart location bar. So when you start typing the URL, Firefox starts giving you options to choose from, and you can now filter those results while you're typing. And last on their list is a new tab switching behavior. Pressing Control Tab now gives you a film strip style overlay, which lets you quickly navigate to your open tabs. This mimics the similar feature in most operating systems nowadays when you Control Tab or probably Command Tab or Apple Tab or whatever it is on the Macs.
Mm-hmm.
This alpha is available from the Mozilla Developer Center, so if you fancy giving it a try, then head on over there. Link will be in the show notes.
And it all sounds great, but again, you hit the same problem until all the other major browsers do exactly the same thing. It's difficult to add these new functionalities into your websites.
They kind of follow in the footsteps of WebKit and Safari, who've had most of this for a while now.
Yeah, so they're catching up to everyone else.
Some of the things that I've not played with before, now they're in Firefox, I've started to play with them, like Text Shadow and Box Shadow, which are genius.
Mm.
And because they were just in Safari, I've never really taken the time to actually play with them, but now that the browsers are catching up to the rapid development at WebKit, then it's worth actually giving it a try. And
do they work quite well, the Text Shadows and things like that?
Yeah, I've not...
They look okay.
Yeah, they look quite nice, and they're not going to be a replacement for doing image-based kind of effects, but certainly for quick things, and yeah, really good.
Probably maybe time to start adding in more enhanced features into your websites and then just gracefully degrading them back for the older ones that don't have these kinds of things.
Yeah,
which we should be doing, really, just try and pushing that point.
Yeah, it's always the same. If you add it in, the browsers that do have it will get slightly better rendering, and the ones that don't, they'll get the same as you always have. Next news item is a List Apart's 2008 survey. It's that time of year again. The List Apart team have unleashed their 2008 survey for the people who make websites. The survey gathers a massive amount of information, with around 33,000 people taking part last year, and it covers a wide range of questions covering all aspects of our beloved industry. The survey covers everything from age, gender and geography to education, employment, vacation or holidays to the rest of us, and those oh-so-important salary details. How many hours worked and your methods of staying up to date with what's happening in the industry are also questions there. The data gathered is compiled into a comprehensive yet quite easy-to-read report, and they also provide the raw anonymised data so that you can do your own number crunching if you really, really want to.
You know, it's a change that in sure notes, that word.
Did you change it?
Yeah, because it doesn't actually exist.
Anonymised data. It's a word, damn it.
It's Shakespearean making up your own words again.
Shakespeare uses it
in... I really liked it and I wanted it to exist, but it doesn't, so I had to change it.
You're so pedantic.
Sorry.
See, that's a real word.
And you'll probably be using it a lot through the show.
Probably. Anyway, you can also have a look at the 2007 survey results if you really want to, and Paul and Marcus will no doubt be covering the results of this year's survey when they're published. So this is a call to arms, really. Help improve this survey by taking part at alyssapar.com. We took part. Did you take part?
I did. I even linked to it. I even put that little badge on my website.
Superb. So we took part. Mm-hmm. So should you.
Yes.
And the last news item is based on a blog post by Richard Rutter on the future of web font embedding. With both Safari and Firefox supporting web fonts in their 3.1 releases and development releases of Opera also adding support, it could be time to start playing with web fonts. Richard starts by defining web fonts as using the @fontface rule to point to regular TrueType or OpenType font files on your web server. This is to clear up any confusion with Internet Explorer's proprietary web font support, which uses EOT, which is embeddable OpenType font files. That's also a way to wrap the fonts in DRM, which I think might severely hamper any efforts to bring web fonts into the mainstream. The font foundries and type designers seem to view web fonts as the death of their industry, insisting that their revenue streams will be destroyed by piracy and free font embedding, rather than seeing this as an opportunity to really boost their industry. There's nothing to say that the app font face rule has to point to a locally hosted font file. The opportunity exists for the font providers to host the fonts themselves and charge for their usage. This saves us as designers from having to install fonts on the machines we design with, and undoubtedly allow us to choose from a much larger selection of fonts which can be switched quickly and easily.
I really like the sound of that.
It looks quite good. I mean, I know we've had stuff like Cipher for a while.
Which does work really well.
It does. It's a bit clunky for me to set up or anything like that. But again, I've seen a similar thing with Cipher where the font files are hosted remotely, and you just add the JavaScript in and it pulls it from their server. I can't remember the site that did that, but if I find it, I'll add it in the show notes. But yeah, it's going to free us from using the bog standard list of fonts which are always in the browsers.
Yeah, and which are obviously very limited and we're getting very repetitive nowadays.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's the news.
That's the news.
Bugblog.com.
Okay, this week's feature, A Year on the Conference Circuit, thank you Paul for that title, has stemmed from a listener's question who asked, which conference would I suggest for a first-timer, and how difficult is it when you don't actually know anybody there? Having attended a couple of the big conferences this year, I thought it would be useful to share my experiences. So here we go. Our conferences, how we love thee. Conferences are a fantastic mechanism for networking and learning, wrapped up in a nice little bundle along with a steady supply of tea and Danish pastries.
Yay!
Conferences, I can personally vouch for, are the future of web design, which is organised by the Carsonified guys, and App Media, which is organised by Vivabit, which both have quite different feels, in my opinion. Future of web design is a one-day conference with no food. Food is quite important at these things, I find. But it's very affordable, around about £150, not including the workshops. This year's conference was chaired by none other than Paul Boag himself, and featured guest speakers like Patrick McNeil, Andy Budd and Daniel Berker. Carsonified guys are big on networking. They organised a before and after party for the conference with substantial tabs behind the bars, which was his. And it was a great opportunity to mingle with the attendees and speakers pre- and post-conference. At Media, on the other hand, is a two-day conference with excellent food. It's more expensive at around £500, although it runs two tracks, a primary and a secondary, of presentations, which obviously means twice as many speakers, and is in general a much larger event than Future of Web Design. This year's At Media saw the appearance of speakers like Jeff Ravine, Jonathan Snook, Dan Rubin and Andy Clark. In contrast, the VivaBit guys focused on the learning, a longer conference with more speakers and a modest after-party in the lobby on the final day. Now, I compare prices of these conferences only because expense is always a consideration, and when you've taken into account accommodation, train tickets, etc., the old credit card can often be left quivering in your pocket, but expect to pay on average around £150 per day for the big conferences. Arguably, the most important part of any conference is the quality of the speakers, and both Future of Web Design and App Media didn't disappoint in this regard. Andy Clark even spoke at both. Speakers' reputations often precede them, and it's a simple matter to research the event beforehand to see if the people talking are the people you'd like to hear from. It's always good to remember that everyone's in the same boat. One thing that's universal about web design conferences is the friendly crowds they attract. It's good to remember that everyone is there for the same reasons, and it's easy to drum up conversation and find mutual ground on a topic you have in common with someone else. The general advice is to just go and say hello, and that goes for introducing yourself to the speakers as well. They're not the kind of rock stars that disappear behind the curtain at the end of the show. Most of them can be found mingling with the crowd at the end of the day, looking for people to talk to just like you. In fact, I can't remember if it was Jonathan Snook or Dan Rubin who said to me it would be nice if more people came up and talked to them. Now, the year's not over. There are plenty of conferences still to come. Naming just a few, there's Deconstruct, organised by Clear Left on the 5th of September. There's the At Media Ajax, again by the Viva Bit guys on the 15th to the 16th of September. There's the Future of Web Apps Expo. God, that took some getting out of it. The Future of Web Apps Expo, organised by the Carsonified guys, 10th to the 8th to the 10th of October. We're going to that one, aren't we, Paul?
Oh, yes.
And the Future of Mobile, again, organised by the Carsonified guys, on the 14th of November. There's going to be many more that I ain't listed there, but they're some of the big ones that I can think of at the top of my head.
Well, international conferences as well.
Oh, yes, we're only talking about the UK here, you know, because we're not globetrotters yet, are we? We're aiming for that. In conclusion, there isn't a conference for beginners as such, but it's safe to say that these types of conferences are deliberately aimed at a broad audience to make them accessible to as many people as possible. So don't feel like you're going to be out of your depth when you attend one. There isn't a test at the end or anything. As for not knowing anyone, it's up to you to be sociable. Introduce yourself and don't be shy. If you're struggling, go and stand near a crowd and invariably someone will turn around and start talking to you.
Unless you're a crazy person or you smell.
Yes, yes.
Which is why no one talks to Ryan.
Tumbleweed.
Sorry, mate.
You started talking to me. I need to get rid of you since.
I love conferences.
I love conferences. I get a lot out of conferences, and we've met some incredible people at conferences.
Yeah, I think the question that they stemmed from him was a bit maybe nervous about attending one as nervous, being on his own. But I'd say that from this year I've been to Future Web Design and App Media, and I didn't find any of the talks over techie.
No.
And the ones I enjoyed the most were the ones that talked about theory or the actual application of certain things, yeah, or that broke things down in simple terms. And I think they do get criticised for that sometimes from some people. But
yeah, because some of the big geeks want it just pure techie. They want to learn a new way of doing things and technically how you do it. But
well, there are conferences for that kind of audience.
There are. But the bigger ones are, because they're so broad, they tone them down a little bit. But it's not to say that they're weak for that. They're actually very good for that, like you say. You know,
my biggest tip would be to go to the pre-party if there is one.
Oh yes, always go the day before.
Yeah. Once everyone's in the same room, usually if there's a free bar, then fantastic. And as soon as everyone's had a couple of drinks, you can walk up and stroll up and chat to anyone and get to know people. And
you can be a little bit starstruck when you walk into a bar and you go, "Oh, look, it's Elliot J. Stocks there, and Larissa Meek, and look, that guy from Litmus. What's his name?"
Paul Farnell.
We've met him before, so we shouldn't really remember his name, shouldn't we? So,
yes.
So that's this week's feature.
Hope you liked it.
Yeah. We're on to listeners' feedback, and we have a couple of questions today. I'm going to read the question to you, Paul, and you're going to answer it for us.
Go on, then.
And this is on font smoothing. Steve writes, "I've been listening to your podcast. I really like it."
Cheers.
You're welcome. Yep, it's all down to us. I just want to ask a question. On Mac, the fonts seem to be all thicker than Windows. What setting are you using? I've been using Best for LCD. Today I changed to automatic and the fonts were much thinner. It looked more alike with Windows fonts. Do you think this is a big problem for Mac users, since the fonts will look different? Which setting do you think is best for the web designer on Macs?
Well, the difference with Mac fonts compared to their Windows counterparts originates from Apple's legacy in desktop publishing and graphic design. The fonts are rendered in a way which would give a closer approximation to how they look when printed. Macs use a specific font wrapper called Defont, or Defont, as I like to call it.
Defont. There's a website called Defont.
Defont.com. Yeah, is it all the time? The Defont wrapper contains extra information to preserve certain features like font outlines and hinting, which can then be rendered more accurately on screen, meaning that in general, fonts look better on a Mac, whichever smoothing method you choose. If you're a designer, I'd heavily recommend testing your design on as many different browsers as possible, but also on different operating systems as well. I work primarily on Windows Vista. Please don't shoot me. And I've got a dual screen setup. My second screen can be flicked over to the Mac, where I can test in Safari, Firefox and Opera on the Mac. I also run a Ubuntu system to test in. Rather than running a standalone IE6 build on Vista, I run a full XP virtual machine with IE6 running natively, because I just really don't trust the standalone builds. One of the main things you'll have to accept is that your design might not look identical on any combination of browser or operating system. And because you're probably designing websites to be viewed by other people, I'd recommend keeping your fonts moving to the default setting of automatic, which is most likely going to be the case for your target audience.
And I have to admit, I've never really worried about it, because I'm not tested on Mac that much.
No.
And well, but that is changing, because as I said last week, I want a Mac.
Moving to the dark side.
I'm moving to the dark side. But it's not been something I'm particularly worried about. Because it looks different in Safari for Windows and Firefox for Windows, and fonts look different anyway.
Yeah, well, it looks different in Safari for Windows and Safari for Mac. So you get nearly there, but just not quite, which is... I've probably got the luxury of having different systems that I can test on, but there are services to change that, which brings us nicely and neatly into question two. Andy asks, "Hey guys, been listening on and off for a while now and love the show." Thank you.
You're welcome. All down to us.
"I was wondering if there's such a thing as a browser emulator, software that allows you to see your site as it would appear on IE, Firefox, Safari, Opera, etc. If there is one, is it total crap and does it really work?"
Well, the answer to your question is yes, it's not totally crap. It does work. There are several websites that can provide you with this type of service. One of the more popular ones is Litmus, which we mentioned earlier, but I couldn't remember Paul Farnell's name. Sorry, Paul. We're now plugging your product, though, so you know you've got to be pleased by that. Litmus is an online emulator that validates your HTML and CSS, as well as presenting you with a screenshot of your website loaded up in up to 23 different browsers across various operating systems. It can also provide you with a report of any compatibility issues it has come across. However, there is a fee to get any real use out of the service. What Litmus does, it actually does very well. However, there are a couple of major drawbacks I've found. Firstly, you've got no interactive experience with your site in these different browsers. Not all issues can be seen from a screenshot, and more often than not, you need to just take your mouse and navigate around the site to find problems. And you can't test JavaScript. You can't see JavaScript animations from a screenshot, so again, that's a big drawback. As Paul said in the previous question, there's no substitute for the real thing, which is having multiple setups with multiple browsers installed. However, that's not always a viable option, especially for freelancers working from home who don't have the budget and space to have several machines and licenses for operating systems needed for testing, in which case sites like Litmus are invaluable. My advice is if you can test on the real thing, do. And if you can't, look at Litmus.
Litmus is really good. I like it.
Litmus is really good. And I was just familiarising myself with it when I started looking at this question. I subscribed for the free one, which just gives you access to testing IE7 and Firefox 2, which is a little bit useless. But it let me get into the interface.
First taste is always free.
Yes. It gave me the option to get into the dashboard and actually see what it does. And it is a very nice interface, but there's only so much you can get from a screenshot.
Yeah, well, based on this question, I kind of revisited browsercam.com.
That were another one that I couldn't quite remember the URL for that one.
The main benefit of that one is that you can actually remote into the machine. So you can remote into a Mac build on 10.3 or whatever and run a certain build of Safari to test if you're really that sadistic. Mm. So you can actually use the OS through your VM, and the same with Linux and XP systems. I think they even, I'm not sure if they do 98, but that for me was really good. But then I managed to get all the systems up and running.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, my license has expired. And there's a nice little button that says upgrade, but it's not my credit card, so it's not cheap.
It's not, you know, that's the other problem, isn't it? It can sometimes be more expensive to run that continual. But then again, I suppose you could never have a home set of rigs that are going to cover such a broad spectrum that service could provide.
You're going to have to offset the cost of licenses and hardware and electricity of the cost of a service like this. Yeah. What might be useful is just finding people with
Macs that are willing to, either, if you know people in person, just to say, can I borrow it for half an hour, or just sending them the link and saying, tell me if anything breaks.
Yeah. It also depends how finite you want to be about testing your site. If you're going to test version IE 5.5 all the way back to there, you know, when people are now considering stopping supporting IE 6 and big developers are now stopping support for IE 6, you know, what would a base camper?
Yeah, some of the
37 signals.
Yeah, they're dropping support. Apple Mobile Me, which if it ever actually works, which fills me with pleasure that Apple products are breaking left, right, and centre. they're not supporting it either.
So,
I suppose if you're suicidal, you can always try things on IE5 on the Mac.
Mobile Me actually complains if you load it up in IE7.
Really?
Yeah. Jeez. It actually says, please use Safari or Firefox or something like that.
Site best viewed in.
Yeah. Yeah, because it doesn't work very well in IE7, which I just thought was fantastic.
Oh, I love it.
So that's the listeners' questions.
That's it.
And we hope you've enjoyed the show.
Yeah, I think we're done. That was quick.
That was very quick. I think that's the shortest show ever, Paul. We've managed to condense that down into half an hour.
Yeah.
So beat that.
With banter and waffle.
Yes. We just obviously don't have as much waffle in us as you and Pat.
A bit more efficient. Are we doing a joke?
Yes. Yes, we are doing a joke.
I've got a little joke.
Go on.
What's the difference between snowmen and snow women?
Go on.
Snowballs. Don't know if that's a little bit too risque for this podcast, but I'm sure I've heard worse.
All my jokes are way too long. So that's the problem. And even if I do tone them down, you know, we'd be here for another 10 minutes, and I'm determined to keep this podcast down to 30 minutes. So on that note, thank you for listening.
Yeah, hopefully see you again sometime, and hopefully we didn't destroy your podcast boy.
Bye.
Hello, world of Bowen.
It's like being on David Letterman.
Boag World is produced by headscape.co.uk, supported by getsignoff.com, and presented by Paul Boag and Marcus Lillington. Technical support is provided by Anna Debenham of mayburn.co.uk, the researcher is Paul Stanton of coffeepower.co.uk, and the show's producer is Ryan Taylor of havrockinspired.co.uk. To contribute to the show, visit boagworld.com/contact, call 020-8133-5122 or join our forum at boagworld.com/forum.